Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Caleb coming up here in a minute. Want to remind you, official viewing party for VGK. They do them every so often at Circa Las Vegas. Great spot to watch the games is at Stadium Swim. So they got the official VGK party going down on Friday. 7 o'clock start in Arizona. You got the 143-foot screen at Stadium Swim. Fans can cheer along with other VGK fans, all wearing VGK apparel. That's how you get in for free. So do that. You get free admission with the VGK apparel. First 100 attendees to the official watch party get a complimentary beverage. Also there, the Vegas Vivas, the mascot chants. There'll be exclusive giveaways, raffle prizes, entertainment, game time snacks, drinks, and more. For more information, go to Circa Las Vegas. But we're giving you the info here. Friday, 7 o'clock puck drop. Knights on the road official draft party at Circa Las Vegas. Let's bring in Caleb Herring. DeMond does not like, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, you don't like Buffalo dealing away Stephon Diggs?
No, I don't. Not at all, Steve. They didn't get anything back for him.
Got a second round.
This feels like a team that just wanted to get rid of a guy. And you can say, oh, he's a receiver that's 30 and he's going to be 31 during the season. Are you a team that's trying to make a push for a Super Bowl or not? This looks like a little bit of a step back for me for the Buffalo Bills. I don't care about the financial ramifications of the contract that he has, anything like that. From just, are you a title contender or are you not? This looks like a step back to me. But a heck of a pickup for the Titans. Got a cornerback, Snead, from KC, and now he's going to be working because the Texans just got the best receiver in the division.
Caleb, on the front end, what do you think of the deal for Buffalo?
I think it's the beginning of what I said that they should do earlier in the season when I said that the Bills' formula for winning just didn't work out. It was an experiment that was fun to watch, exciting for Josh Allen's career, but they should have blown the team up. I think they are the most overrated contender that we've seen in the last 4 years. And for whatever reason, they're a talented team. Josh Allen is a talented guy. Stephon Diggs, great receiver. They had a good defense for a while, but they just didn't have the right formula to win. And for whatever reason it was, they couldn't get over the hump to win. So the writing was on the wall that the formula just didn't work. So I think getting rid of Diggs is kind of finally admitting, like, hey, yeah, he's great, but we got to try something different. We got to approach this a different way. Obviously, Josh Allen is going to be the centerpiece of whatever they do going forward for the next decade. So we'll see if they can pick the pieces up around him to make him better again. But I'm interested to see how – I don't watch the betting market like everybody else does these days, but I'm interested to see where the Houston Texans now fall as far as AFC title odds and their odds of being a Super Bowl contender this year with the way C.J. Stroud performed and now giving him a future Hall of Fame weapon like Stephon Diggs. I'm excited to see what that looks like.
So on the Bills, Candy, are you ready to attack or should I?
Take it first, buddy. I've been doing it all show.
I think this nonsense about the Bills having a window, a failed experiment, Caleb, is ridiculous. They've fallen short by a few plays here and there. They've been this close. They just haven't made certain plays, whether it's defense or offense. How do you just write them off? They've been right there.
Well, I write them off because I'm not saying that they weren't good enough. I'm just saying that there's for whatever reason, the obstacles in their way, whether it's the Chiefs, the Ravens, whoever was in their way, that team just couldn't get over. They weren't constructed to beat the teams they needed to beat to get to the Super Bowl, which is why the NFL is so hard to win it. Like, to get to a Super Bowl in a single elimination playoff bracket is tough. And this Bills team just didn't do it. I'm not saying it as a bad thing, but sometimes you just got to know when to move off. Like, when to get out. When you're bankrupting your franchise to try to keep guys because they're talented, and you think you got a shot. I think the shot to win was the year they lost in overtime to Kansas City. I think if they win that game, they're Super Bowl champs. And then we're not worried about whether or not the team achieved their ultimate goal or not. But for whatever reason, they just didn't get it done in that 3 to 4 year window where everybody's on kind of affordable contracts and things are looking up for you. I think right now they're in premature rebuild mode where they're just not going to be patient and draw this thing out any longer than it needs to be drawn out. Mind you, there may be in-house issues as well that I didn't even touch on, like with Stephon Diggs being unhappy with Josh Allen and the way things went especially in the playoffs for him. So there's a lot of layers to why you just move off of certain projects. I think the Bills are just at that point where, yeah, you're still riding success. You're still a marketable name in free agency as far as bringing people in, but you just can't bunker down on old ways. And I don't know that Stephon Diggs is necessarily old ways, but you just got to bring some new life, some new energy to the roster, I think, and change the approach. And I think that's what this move does.
Caleb Herring is with us. Damon and Adam Candy. So we're hanging out here in the Finley Toyota Studios. All right, let's turn our attention to some women's basketball. I'm just going to throw a name out there, and there's about 10 different directions you could probably go in. Angel Reese.
Well, the darling or villain of the women's basketball story so far, right? I mean, first of all, good for her for what she's become, the entity now that is Angel Reese. But the harsh reality of what I'm going to say is that the post-game woe is me sort of spill that she gave was just, it just falls flat to me. And I'm not going to say that she was cast as a villain by anybody else, as has been said and by other members of the media and since they were eliminated by Iowa. I don't think she was cast as a villain. I think she played the villain role well, and she made it marketable. I just don't agree with also making the victim marketable in defeat. I think it would be more on brand to say, yeah, we lost, I took it on chin, but I'll be back. I'll bounce back. I always bounce back. You know, something to own it when you lose, essentially is what I'm saying. Then I also look at the side of this. We welcomed this, the idea of NIL, the idea of, you know, things like the transfer portal or these young people taking ownership of their young adult lives and having the freedom to make money, to earn and build a brand for themselves and take advantage of their name, image, and likeness. We also gave them the control to create their own image and likeness. Angel Reese created what she is. She is polarizing. That's fine. When you're polarizing, you have to be able to deal with the positives and the negatives. And you don't get the sympathy from me when the negatives start to overwhelm you. I'm sorry that it happens. It's unfortunate. But when you put yourself out there and expose yourself in that way, you make yourself vulnerable to those attacks. And as a young person, you need to make sure you have the fortitude to handle them in the right way. I don't know that all of her emotions were playing to the victim role. I think playing your last college game is something that makes you sad. But some of the things that she chose to say in that moment made me think she was kind of passing the buck on being responsible and for what she amassed and what she created in her time at LSU. So I, Angel Reese, wish her nothing but the best, as I do with all these young athletes who are in this new foreign territory. But this is the world we asked for. You're controlling your name and image and likeness. Make of it what you will. So little humble pie never hurt anybody.
There are a lot of things I love about this show, Cofield, but the intelligent opinions that we get have to be right there at the top, because I'm going to tell you what, Caleb just changed my whole opinion on this situation in just those 2 minutes. Like, without, like, he
Fickle.
Just flipped my whole thought on this with the idea of you create your own image, right? Like, you are being compensated, and let's be clear, both Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark have well into seven figures in endorsements. They are both millionaires for what they have achieved over the last couple of years. And Angel Reese did it in part with a very different image. Now, I think that got carried a little bit too far with anybody who talked about the, you know, the whole hero and villain, good and evil, a little too easy with the very white Iowa team and the much darker complexion LSU team. I think that's a really dangerous comparison to get into. But the idea that Angel Reese played into this idea of y'all don't respect me, you know, I you treat me differently, and then to come back with the, you know, I've endured a lot and the other excuses that Caleb mentioned, you're absolutely right. You have to own what that image is. And that image is what she's gotten paid on. And more power to her for it. I have no problem with that. But there are trade-offs that come with that. And that was a hell of an argument, Caleb. I just want to give you a big round of applause here on CNC.
Well, let's
Adam, I am so disappointed in you.
Let's extend this out, though. Who would tell her, hey, be careful? Who's going to learn her? Mulkey?
That's the point.
Mulkey?
That's the point. No one. When you become an adult, when you accept the responsibility. It is no one's responsibility to guide you through that. You have stepped out on your own truly, right? And there's so many different decisions in society where we have come to a point where we expect to be independent of judgment, of scrutiny, of criticism, but then also want to play the role of somebody should have guided me through this. You cannot have both. You can be independent. You can have the right to do whatever you choose, but you don't have the freedom from consequences. And that's with your speech in the political realm. That's with your actions as a player. There's all kinds, as an adult in normal life who doesn't have a seven-figure salary, who's not making NIL bills, I have an obligation to myself to make sure I make decisions that benefit me and that have minimal consequences. It's Angel Reese's job to create an image that she is comfortable with, that she can go to sleep at night, that she doesn't have to feel victimized by. And I think we need to get back to understanding that. I have no problem with people being able to create their own image, be their own person, have their own likes, dislikes, love who they want to love, behave the way they want to behave. But you don't get to be exempt from the consequences of what you choose to do. You choose to be Angel Reese. You choose to embrace the unapologetically black girl stuff that you promoted, right? And we are there for it. Absolutely, I support that. But don't renege on what you chose to do when there's negative criticism, when it's hard, when you have a bad game, when you're not the center of attention, when somebody else gets the best of you. Don't then go back into this fetal mode of, I'm the victim, everybody's out to get me. Your seven-figure deal says not everybody's out to get you, right? That there's a lot of positive things that came along with being Angel Reese as well, an outpouring of support financially, spiritually, emotionally. People support Angel Reese. Embrace it. Do it. Keep going. I'm great with it, and this goes for anybody. But don't then revert back to somebody help me. I'm the victim. I need help, or I need assistance. Somebody needs to guide me out of this. No, we gave you the keys to your life. You do it with what you choose. There's no more excuses. It's not a coach's fault anymore. It's not the media's fault. You are in charge of your own destiny, especially as a young collegiate athlete with the kind of stage Angel Reese has. You're in control. Make the right decisions and be confident and comfortable with those decisions.
Well, Caleb, by the way, we got to move on from this.
I just love that Caleb sent over. He literally did, because we always will exchange ideas and stories. It did just say Angel Reese. I didn't expect all that out of that. That was Cam, you're right. He's freaking hammer time. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I just want to say that even though we can say that obviously about being an adult and the brand that you create with name, image, and likeness and getting paid, I don't think that that absolves, let's say, fans of the game from being, let's just say, rude. Where I do think that some of that online criticism, it's not enough to just say to any college kid, whether it be football, basketball, whichever sport you're playing, that, hey, now that there's NIL, that takes the sting away from the, let's just say, maybe some of the bigoted criticism that you get online. And you can just say, hey, well, now you get paid, so it doesn't matter, it doesn't affect you. I do think that, yeah, when you lose that game, it's that realization of, my college career is over, I'm probably going to turn pro, but I do want to let the media know that sometimes – this stuff sucks. And it's just not that we have to say, hey, well, you get paid now, who cares if it sucks? I don't have a problem with athletes voicing that. And it's not so much, woe is me. When is she going to say this again that you care? This is after the end of one of the most watched games in women's college basketball history. So now is the time for her to have that platform to say some of these things. It can't just be, hey, take the money, shut up, nobody cares. If we're going to invest in these athletes, we should invest in what they have to say after a loss. We might not like it and could be, hey, it sounds like a little sour grapes, but to me, I want to hear.
You just said the key there. You said, we can give you the microphone, you can say what you want to say, and we might not like it. That is the point. We might not like it. We do not have to like and agree with what Angel Reese has to say. I, for one, have a more spirited, competitive, good sport mentality when it comes to losing and losing gracefully. I think that says a lot about your character. I don't think that Angel Reese did that in that moment, and I don't like that. I don't like that the whole history of Angel Reese had to become the narrative of LSU losing to Iowa. I didn't like that. But that to me, just is the way of copping out. Like, I don't – first of all, the bigoted statements and the controversy and the negative talk from fans was happening when it was free, right? Even when you're an amateur, there is the hate and vitriol on one side. You're still polarizing. The Alabama fans hate LSU players. It's always been a thing. So that's the NIL is not what has fanned that flame. The only thing is the microphone is louder, and athletes who choose to will say things about it to make themselves out to be the victim. There's a narrative in our country right now that glorifies victimhood. And if you can control the narrative by being a victim, you're untouchable by criticism, by hate, by anything that's polarized, that's outside of your realm of comfort. And I think that's what Angel Reese tried to tap into. She couldn't be touched in that moment. And not to make the comparison, but it only works because, and yeah, it's hard, it's risky to do this, but Caitlin Clark last year in defeat to LSU had a very much more graceful and, in my competitive sportsmanship mentality, a very graceful way of handling that spotlight. She makes just as much, if not more, than Angel Reese in her money deals. She chose in that moment to use it to highlight her teammates, to do other things with that, and accept the responsibility in that moment, not to put it off on the people who hated on her along the way, or the fact that South Carolina had a target on her back because of what she did, or LSU admittedly had a target on her back because of what she did to them on her way to the championship last year. So I'm just saying there's consequence to both. You can have it your way, and then you can choose to allow us to consume it and like it and consume it or don't like it. Right now, I'm choosing to not like what Angel Reese did, and that's my right as well. It's her right to be an individual. It wasn't for me. It wasn't the taste I like, and I just want that message to be out there.
Caleb Herring is with us. All right, let's talk about fighting when it comes to football. UNLV football had a couple of transfers last week, and it's kind of interesting because there are stories that I've noticed in conjunction with it. It's not really official stories, but first of all, they're starting left guard, Alani Makaeli, who goes all the way back to the Sanchez here in terms of being a commit. I'm out of practice last Tuesday, and I see him working with the threes, which I never see that. I'm like, okay, that's weird. And I don't over you and I, we don't overreact, and we learned it last year. Don't worry about who's in the ones, twos, threes, because they do a lot of cross-training. Then the next day, Alani announces, and he's their starting left guard, he's in the transfer portal. Will Thomas has been working a lot at left guard. He's a transfer in. Last year spent some time on special teams and some power run sets. He's 6'7", 215. Check that, 315. What do we think happened here?
Based on what I see and just based on speculation, there's unexpected competition, right? And we all were kind of victims of seeing certain names and just assuming that when they didn't transfer after the season, these guys who were former starters got significant playing time would be, the guys, especially on the offensive line. Like, four out of five guys would be returning. You could have five offensive linemen that had meaningful playing time last season also start this next coming season. And Alani Makaeli is one of those guys. You just, like, in your mind, subconsciously, like, he'll be back? Okay, he started spring, he's going to be here. And then, the competition of spring starts to come. And then the writing kind of gets on the wall as one of the factors, and not the only factor, but one of the factors that make guys kind of sway their decision as things unfold during the spring. And maybe they're internally not happy with the reps or not happy with working with the threes and think they've earned the right to not have to cross train or what have you anymore. Maybe that kind of sets in a little bit. Then also there's, the upcoming potential of what you could do somewhere else. If you feel like for whatever reason, whether it's an external source that's pushing you to go get some NIL deal elsewhere or some better playing time exposure in a different market, then that also weighs in as well. And it's a never-ending cycle for what you could potentially be thinking and considering. And it's the harsh reality of the transfer portal. Yeah, there's a few openings on the calendar, but these are constant thoughts for these athletes of what I want to do with my future. And some days the writing's just on the wall, and some days you feel confident that you're going to be good where you're at, and then the next day you wake up, you're like, maybe not so much. I think maybe that's the case with a lot of these late transfers in the spring. It was very unexpected, and I agree with you. It was unexpected to see him go, but I think there's some competition that we did not expect to be flourishing here in the spring.
It's not unusual for guys to transfer after the spring, and that's coming up. The window's May 1st to the 15th. It's just a little weird with four practices left to see guys go. Another guy is veteran wide receiver Zyle Griffin, which is very interesting because I'm out of practice the other day, and I'm looking at my roster, and I'm like, wait, number two is Antonio Doyle on defense. He's 6'3", 255. There's a smaller guy. Oh, he's on offense. There's a number two on offense. Okay, what's going on here? Well, it turns out that Damian McDaniel, their top-rated recruit, a kid from the Galveston area in Texas, who was heavily recruited as a DB. UNLV got him because they said, hey, you can play wide receiver. He's out there late in the spring playing, and then you start putting two and two together. You're like, oh, maybe Zyle Griffin saw that this kid's running with the ones and twos and was like, wow, okay. This is not what I expected. Listen to Brennan Marion talk about this kid, McDaniel, who is a true frosh and just came to UNLV within the last week?
I mean, he's still being Miss Johnson's home room right now. So he's done a great job of just coming on the field and being explosive, making plays. He's a little baby Ricky White out there, just a baby deer, just trying to figure it out. But, I mean, 2 weeks ago, he won a state championship in basketball. Now he's out here on the field making plays, and he's been explosive. You know, he's still trying to figure out how to get lined up. It's a lot for a freshman to learn, but he's done a good job of just going in there and making plays, messing up full speed. That's what we expect young guys to do.
Okay. Well, this is quite a story at the end of the spring that the top recruit is in. They like him. They want speed. He's got speed, and he's already making waves.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, coming in the middle of the spring, really, and jumping right into the fire, it's interesting because when you graduate in high school matters here. Obviously, you can't be a high school student out there running around with the college guys. But your high school schedule and when you're on track to graduate, whether your semester system or quarter system, kind of impacts things as well. But there's a couple of freshmen out there who aren't due to be, like, actually it on till the fall, I guess, if you want traditional calendars, that made their way out in the spring and are getting some valuable reps here in their first spring camp. And he's one of those guys. And Zyle probably, again, saw the competition, saw the writing on the wall. He was a guy who was kind of deep down on the depth chart anyway. And then this guy with all this potential of who he was and kind of the reps he was getting force-fed when he first got in these last few practices kind of really took over. And I think Zyle probably, again, saw the writing on the wall and said, well, it might not be my year next year. I thought I was going to break the seal, but here this guy comes, and he's pretty good. Baby Ricky Wright is high praise for sure. So you say, you know, let me get out of Dodge and I'll go find my footing elsewhere. And not necessarily a bad decision, but it's the one that unfortunately takes him out of the Rebel family for now. So, but the freshman getting out there, he does have a very good build. And I'll say this from seeing him out there. He has a very good build for a freshman, especially at the wide receiver position. Not a lot of necessary, especially when you look at him next to Ricky White, they do look very similar, like similar physiques. Not a lot of bulking he'll need to do, but just trying to keep his speed and get lined up and get acclimated to running routes and taking hits on the edges in college is, I think, good for him. So I saw him get some live touches in during the scrimmage last Saturday, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of him at the spring game this Saturday.
Caleb, really good stuff. I'll see you soon. Caleb and I will be on the field doing some announcing, some interviews for the spring showcase. It's 1 o'clock at Allegiant Stadium, free admission. So come on down. It'll be a lot of fun. And, you know, for most people, it's their first look at, again, the new look Rebels. Thank you.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling out on the 5 o'clock hour. Candy's here. Come on, Cofield. Arash checks in from the Sporting Tribune. Arash Markazi. Arash, we have a lot to get into. What's going on, buddy?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. We're getting ready to head down to Phoenix, and we've been running this by several of our guests, those who travel a lot. And I want Candy's opinion on this in a second. I have never kind of nailed the sweet spot for hangout spots or food in Phoenix. Have you?
Well, so I went there my freshman year. I was in Tempe, Arizona, the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at Arizona State. It was amazing. And I am actually going to be in Phoenix as well for the Final Four, so I will see down there.
All right. We're going to rebook you for the Radio Row. We'll see you later. No. Candy, have you – you're a well-traveled guy. You're a star play-by-play guy. Phoenix, you mesh with it?
I mean – maybe because I went to college 2 hours away in Flagstaff and my ex is from Tempe.
Oh, you better.
Who I spent 15 years with, that I might be able to give you a recommendation or two in the Phoenix area.
And not Pizzeria Bianco. It's just you just can't get in. I watch all the reality shows. He looks like a cool guy. The pizza looks awesome. I don't wait.
I'm going to give you the – no, you don't try to go to the one downtown. I'm going to give you the one that nobody knows to go to that I've never once waited for a table.
Hello. This is why you have friends right here in the media, right? The audience is like, who cares about your travel plans, fatty? All right, let's get into a couple of the big stories here. One, the Trop is officially closed. I saw sad pictures yesterday of the chains on the front door. We talked about the Trop last week, but you wrote a story about it, and I thought you got pretty good response about it closing down and, you know, what's in the future with the A's with a potential stadium there.
Yeah, I mean, we still have to figure out how much room are they going to give them to build this ballpark, because what they've said right now is not big enough to build a ballpark. But that being said, I mean, it does seem like it's trending in that direction. I do think it's important to note that they were going to tear down the Trop regardless. So it's not like because they're shutting down the Trop and because they plan to tear it down by the end of the season, that's confirmation that this is going to happen. But there's still a lot of logistics that need to be figured out. But listen, I'm glad people went to the Trop for the last time or went there for the first time. It's a great location. I think, Steve, we both agree it's not a great location for a ballpark. That's a great location for, like, a resort. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I do think they are pretty well enough along in terms of doing that. And so like, I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, but this idea that it's 50-50, I think it's closer to 75-25 that this thing will indeed happen.
Do we think that Sacramento is a legit threat? Because it looks like that's going to be the temp home. The owner of the Kings is buddies with Fisher. I know Lacob wants to buy a Major League Baseball. Check that. Yeah, he wants to buy a Major League Baseball team. There could be a dream team ownership. They could come together and try to buy it off of Fisher. I wonder what this means for Vegas and what it means for one of your favorite cities, Sacramento.
Yeah, right. No, so, I mean, the key there is the TV money. And I think at the end of the day, if his TV partners are fine with him moving the team to Sacramento and will pay him the same price that they pay him, and again, that's not the Bay, so you are effectively relocating the team. So how does that change their TV contract? And if it does, my guess is he's going to find a way to keep the team in Oakland for as long as possible. I really do think that the deal that they presented him was more fair than I thought it was going to be. It was, listen, at the end of the day, they would like to have Major League Baseball in their city. They would like to be compensated if the team leaves. So I thought it was a fair deal. But that relationship, listen, if you don't think the Oakland A's are coming to Las Vegas, that's one thing. I have not talked to anyone recently that thinks that they're going to stay. Like, that team is gone.
Yeah. Now the story's, arrived that could Sack steal it from Vegas. I don't think they can, but, baseball is run by buffoons, so I wouldn't put anything past them. Let's talk USC, and let's talk first the men's basketball side. And this is so much bigger than just USC basketball. Bronny James may be going into the portal. There's really no confirmation yet. LeBron would not confirm it. He said, the young man has some tough decisions to make. To me, when he goes into the portal, I think this is a gigantic story to follow.
Yeah, I mean, so from what I've been told, that's not a factual story just yet. Okay. I think it's more likely that he's going to take some time to prepare for the draft. So I don't necessarily think that as long as his dad's playing for the Los Angeles Lakers, unless he wants to go to UCLA or, like I don't think he's going to go somewhere else. So, that is a TBD situation right there. With the head coaching situation, it was such a unique thing where USC basketball, and I've said this for years, is such a plum job because that's a football school. So you don't need to win big. There's no one in that alumni who's thinking you got to go to the Final Four and you got to win the whole thing. If once every few years you get to the Sweet 16, if you get to the Elite Eight, that's great. So he did that. So Andy Enfield did that. His problem, in a weird way, he was a hell of a recruiter. He recruited very well. So the talent that he had on the team this year, that team should have been in the tournament. Now, I don't know how far they go, but at the end of the day, he was on the hot seat. He knew that, and he knew that he had to go.
I threw the names your way of Eric Musselman and even San Diego State's Brian Dutcher.
So both of them are amazing in terms of their track record of success at multiple programs. I do think Eric Musselman is the coach that they want right now. That is the coach that they've kind of pinpointed. I have not gotten this confirmed, but I do think he's coming out to Los Angeles to talk to the athletic director, Jen Cohen. This is her first big hire since taking over. So this is a big hire for her. And again, when you look at what he's done at Nevada, at Arkansas, again, those are not particularly simple places to lead the team to the Elite Eight and the Sweet 16. So he would be a big-time hire, I think.
Candy, I'll run it by you. If you could get one of them, and hey, listen, with Dutcher, you're going to have to pay a lot of money because you're going to have to pry him away from San Diego State. He loves San Diego. He turned down Minnesota, which he's very connected to. $5 million a year for above $6 million a year. Who would you hire, Candy, Musselman or Dutcher?
Musselman, without a question, because the track record is there. Arash just made it very clear. Everywhere Eric Musselman goes, he wins. He recruits at a high level. He coaches at a high level. You just have to accept with Eric Musselman that there is going to be a shelf life because there are personality traits there that end up grating on people after a while. But the fact of the matter is, the age of a Dean Smith being there for decades on end, you don't have a lot of those coaches in the first place. So to me, I like Musselman's record of winning in multiple places, especially in the SEC, compared to what Dutcher has done.
Arash is with the Sporting Tribune on Cofield & Company, Arash Markazi. Let's close on this one, Arash. A little follow-up on our conversation last week about $35 big box of sushi at Dodger Stadium. I saw, I don't even know if you're aware of this guy, but one of the coaches from Last Chance U is kind of blown up doing his own podcast, Jason Brown, who was a lunatic on that show, and he was complaining big time about the cost of going to a Dodgers game this year. Are the Dodgers potentially with, raising prices, they got to make a lot of that money back, right? With Ohtani, with their other Japanese import pitcher, is there a chance that could they go beyond the means of maybe average fans to make their money back and turn off some average fans who are like, yeah, I can't spend $800 to take a couple of people to a freaking baseball game?
Yeah, that's a great question because someone had told me before the season, look at what the Dodgers have, who they've brought in with Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto and all the big names. And I said, yes. But I believe that they've done this at a cost when you look at the ticket prices and the parking prices. And to that point, Steve, they have not sold out a game, a true sellout, since the first game of the season. And you look at that crowd, and I'm driving to the game tonight, and no, I will not try.
Have the sushi! You got to be the test!
At some point, but come on. I mean, I'm not trying sushi at a ballpark. We talked about it. I'm not doing that. But there are big gaps. Steve, there are big gaps without people in seats. And again, that would not normally happen. But it's happening because the days of walking up to the ballpark and getting a $20 ticket and parking for $10-$15, those days are gone. So you got to pay $60-$100 to get a good ticket, or you got to pay $20-$50 to park your car. And so it is a pricey thing, which for years was not the case with the Dodgers. They were the team of the people. That is not the case this particular season.
Arash, be careful driving, and don't get so worked up when I ask you to eat sushi. I'll see you, buddy.
All right, see you, bye.
There he is. I sent them a screenshot of the sushi box, Candy, and by them, because Adam Hill got real snobby about sushi. I was just actually going to follow up and ask Arash to get some sushi in Phoenix, but probably not good enough for the likes of Arash and Adam Hill. It looked fine to me, and I understand there's a little risk here with the sushi at the ballpark. Would you try it?
Of course I would try it.
Exactly.
Where on earth would you rather have sushi than in Los Angeles, right? I don't care that it's at a ballpark. That's fine. Look around the rest of that park and see some of the things that are being served. And it's not any more expensive than anything else there. I went on this whole rant last year about how you can't get your hands on an alcoholic beverage for less than $16, $17 at a Dodger game. But you know what? If you went to opening day, you know what you saw in the first inning? Mookie Betts, followed by Shohei Ohtani, followed by Freddie Freeman. So yeah, you're paying for the show you're getting.
So in setting up the Final Four, I got to hit a couple of basketball-related stories here. One is absolutely connected with the Final Four. Oh, no. It might be the UConn jinx. Last year, they come here for the Sweet 16. They stay at the Luxor. The rooms weren't up to snuff. They hadn't been cleaned well, and UConn made a big stink about it. They're having trouble getting to Phoenix, huh? They have some plane issues?
A little trouble getting out of stores, you know. I'm sure Rebecca Lobo, by the way, didn't have any problem with spending 4 years in stores while she was dragging
that,
Albany.
That is
Stores,
funny.
Connecticut,
yeah.
And all of the great things that you can do in Stores, Connecticut. But, yeah, the plane that UConn was supposed to be taking out to the Final Four is significantly delayed. They're having crew problems with having pilots to fly the plane. They tried to find a charter. They can't find a charter. If they take a smaller plane, they're going to have to stop to refuel and not get there until the middle of the night. So, first of all, this is the problem with the NCAA tournament, is that all of the travel has to go through the NCAA. Like, you can't do what you've done during the season. You have to go through them in order to book your travel. So, you know what? Even though they have been bulldozing through the tournament, Cofield, I believe that Danny has got his motivation. Don't you think? Don't you think? Danny Hurley's got exactly what he wants. Say the NCAA is going to do everything they can to make sure that we don't win this championship, and you all need to go out there and prove to them that it doesn't matter what plane we have to take and when we arrive.
I have so many themes that I'm ready to hit at the Final Four. One, I have to do this one because I've lashed out multiple times about Dan Hurley and his insistence on claiming that he's going to beat up fans. Last year, we got to talk to Dad, Bob Hurley Sr. We got to talk to Bobby as well. Who's going to know better than Dad and older brother if Danny can actually fight? Adam Hill claims that Dan Hurley would whoop any fan. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Going to be some real investigation going on. Another basketball story I got to hit, Candy, because we did not, I don't think we spoke about this, you and I. The NIT was set up to reward the big boys, and then 13 big boys from what was the Power 5, it's going to a Power 4 now that the Pac-12 was fizzled out. 13 said, nope, no thank you. Where's the NIT going from here? Because we got some breaking news today. I don't know if you saw this one. You know I love variety. Fox and AEG to compete with March Madness, which we'll throw in, compete, if there is an NIT, by launching their own postseason hoops tournament. Now this is where they take the cake, or I start vomiting up the cake. Because it's Fox, says here, they'll rely on 16 teams drawn largely from the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Big East. Where will this tournament be played? Right here in Sin City, at the MGM Grand Garden Arena and T-Mobile. I posed the question earlier on Twitter and said, why would a mid-major conference like the Big East have auto bids while in a Mountain West Conference city, the Mountain West Conference may get no invites to this tournament. I got some problems here.
Is St. John's going to bring a big contingent out to Vegas for the Fox IT or whatever this is, or the new CBI or the new CIT, or, you know, I mean, how many iterations have we had?
The college basketball crown!
Other smaller damn tournaments.
Yep.
If you can't get teams to go to the NIT, what's going to make them show up to the Fox Invitational?
TV partnerships.
Stop.
TV partnerships, official TV partnerships. Not that ESPN doesn't have them. But I guess ESPN could flex its muscle to make sure that teams got in,
right,
bigger name teams got in the NIT when it was resculpted to make sure they got in, and they turned it down using the excuse, oh, transfer portal work, we got to do that. I'm guessing, well, here's the thing. With Fox and the Big East, Fox has the Big East over the barrel. Because, and this is why I always reference the Big East as a mid-major, until the schools are getting $20 million plus each from their Fox deal, they're not a Power 5. The whole Power thing was dubbed because those schools, from their TV deals, get $32 million plus up to like $90 million like the Big Ten. Getting $4.6 million a year, you can tell me you're a Power Conference. You're not. Now, they have top-end programs like UConn and Creighton right now and Marquette. The other programs, we'll see. But I find this really interesting that it'll land here in Vegas, and we have to have Big East in because Fox has a partnership with them.
Well, think back a few years when our good friend Jim Livengood, former UNLV Arizona AD, former chair of the NCAA Division I Championship Committee, just think about what Jim Livengood tried to bring a tournament here, right? Jim Livengood had his big names lined up behind it, and that couldn't last. So unless Fox is going to go back and reopen its deal, or unless there's some clause in this deal that I don't know about that's going to require these teams to show up, if I'm sitting there in the Big Ten especially, I'm going to say, whoa, hey, you want us to come out for this, you're going to have to sweeten this pot a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to feel obligated to come on out here to play in the third-tier Johnny Tires Invitational from Fox.
On the way back, we'll address this question. I want events here. I want them to work, though. But we'll address the question because we talked about it a few days ago. What's better, a Fox-driven 16-team men's tournament with the Big 12 and the Big East and other partners involved, or rounds 1 and 2 of the women's tournament all here in Vegas?
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
So, Candy, I posed a question before the break. And again, I don't want to dump on basketball tournaments that are coming here to Vegas. I want them to work. The concept of Fox and AEG putting together a tournament for T-Mobile, and this is a postseason tournament that essentially would compete with the NIT for teams that don't make the NCAA, but it would be Big Ten, Big 12, and Big East would get the lion's share of the 16 bids. What would do bigger business in Vegas? And do you buy – we talked about this, I think, on Friday, that what if – we don't have 8 arenas, which would be perfect. We have like 6 that are over 7,000, 6,000. What if we helped women's college basketball get out of their home gyms in the first round, which makes it almost impossible for any kind of upsets in the 1-2-3s and even the 4s? What if we could host the round of 64 and 32 here in Vegas? Would that be a bigger draw than – a NIT sort of tournament for the men?
I actually don't know that it would be significantly different. I think you would do well. Yeah. I think it would be better, but I don't know that it would be hugely better. I'm going to go back to an idea that I wrote about in the Las Vegas Sun probably at least 7 years ago at this point. I spoke to Debbie Antonelli, who is the Hall of Fame women's basketball analyst who was in business with a couple of folks here in Vegas, including Jim Livengood, to bring the Sweet 16 to Vegas. Bring the Sweet 16 Elite 8. Here's why I think it's a better plan the first couple of rounds. The first two rounds of the NCAA Women's Tournament give you a lot of non-competitive games because there is a wide gulf between the elite teams and the teams that win automatic qualifying bids, right? You're going to have a lot of games that just aren't that great. I agree that you can get games off those home floors, but I would still do them regionally, right? You can know every single year that South Carolina is going to be competitive, and you can have that first two rounds somewhere in the area of South Carolina's campus to get it off the home floor, but to still make it so that you get the fan attendance. But once we get to the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8, if you were watching this past week, you saw a lot of really high-end games. I think teams that could plan travel ahead for that, fan bases that know their teams are good enough to make it to the Sweet 16, the Elite 8, I think that would do boffo business in Las Vegas.
That is a good idea. That is a good idea. Because one of the things we were talking about is if you have the round of 64 and 32 here in Vegas and it's in conjunction when the crowds are coming in for the men's first and second round, too much competition, too much going on. So then you get free of that because the Vegas loves LVCVA hotels, everyone, right? We love that first weekend, so you're not messing with that. And then you wouldn't have to have that many arenas. You could actually do 4 regionals in 4 different buildings. That's good. I like that a lot. Go in the bag.
Dave, stick your hand in there, Dave.
Not going to say I watch a lot of porn, but I think a lot of people do, apparently, because I read that LA Times story on LSU and dirty debutantes. Never made the connection. And apparently other people made like this instant connection. You guys?
I'm sorry. Say what, say who now?
I don't know what you're talking about, brother.
Okay. Good.
So. I mean, I'm I am familiar with the concept of the genre of film that you're talking about, but not this particular title.
Okay. I just never made that connection when I was when I read the story in the LA Times, and people seem to freak out that thinking the writer, that's what the reference was to, so I don't get it. Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
There is a Caitlin Clark lookalike, Devon?
Yes, she was filmed outside of the most recent game against LSU, taking pictures with fans, people just so excited to see her, taking pictures with pseudo-celebrities. But that's how you know she's made it. She's got a lookalike. Someone's going to, hey, I'm going to an Iowa game now because I bear some resemblance to Caitlin Clark, mm-hmm. and this could be my new meal ticket.
Could she overtake one of the best lookalikes who's definitely profited a bit off it with fake Andy Reid? Because he's everywhere. I think he was in Vegas. I think he might have been on Radio Row.
Number one all time. Oh, he is the guy. He brings the play sheet. He brings the headset.
He does.
And the more Andy Reids that we can have out there, the better.
I think we do need to, we'll have to tweet this out so people can take a look at the video. I don't even know if you guys clicked on it. But I do believe that that lady had a fake nose. I think she added some bulk to her nose. Take a look at it. It seemed like it was a prosthetic, but I'm very sensitive about schnozzes. Like, if you don't have the schnoz to pull off the impersonation, don't insult those of us with schnozzes and start going with, you know, the fakeness, please. I take this stuff seriously. But pretty good lookalike. If that's not a fake nose, pretty good lookalike, and obviously has a bevy of Caitlin Clark 22 jerseys, so good for her.